broadcasting before and probably after the rapture. It's the Drew Marshall Show.
This is when I first learned to do the white man's overbite.
Oh, yeah. Dancing in a big circle.
You've heard about the new dance craze. Listen to us. I'm sure you'll be amazed. How do I know these lyrics? How do I know the lyrics?
Because you were biting your bottom lip.
Lance Hahn is the author of How to Live in Fear, Mastering the Art of Freaking Out. He's on the phone with us right now. His website is lancehahn.com. And he is our HarperCollins Canada book guy today.
Yeah.
Lance, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, Drew? It's good to meet you and talk to you.
You don't know that yet. You do not know that yet.
That's a great point. That's great. I could be very disappointed after this.
Well,
be prepared.
Just describe my dating life. So, listen, I don't normally get pastors on the show because, I don't know, pastors just don't interest me that much. But because you have dealt with what you've dealt with, and you are who you are, and you wrote a book that I think has a fair bit of testicular fortitude in it, that's why you're on the show today. It is actually quite intriguing, your journey. So I want to just get right into you telling us the best I'm on stage or I'm in front of people freak out story you've ever had. Ready, go.
All right, here we go. 2014, not that long ago. Everything perfect storm in the church. My best friend and confidant had an emotional breakdown, and he was my executive guy. My assistant had just been radically healed, and the church, you know, ended up demonizing her. I ended up having a huge blow-up. Everything was going wrong. We're in the middle of a capital campaign. Everything's hitting. My body starts to snap. 40-day-long panic attack. In my room, can't listen to worship. It's freaking me out. Can't pray. That's freaking me out. And I thought my brain was going to split in half. There you go. How about that one?
Gee whiz. So have you ever been on, like, hold on. Let me ask you this kind of direct question. What's wrong with you?
You know what? I don't know how long your show is, but I'm pretty sure that would take about 6 days.
No, but don't you have some sort of, you know, verifiable doctor's note that says you got something wrong with you?
Heck yeah, of course. Yeah, man, I'm diagnosed. Since I was 6 years old, I've had panic disorder. And back then, nobody knew what that was, and I grew up in the church, so people tried to cast demons out of me. But that's not the point. The point is that I've been on meds for the last 20 years, so yeah, I have to regulate all that stuff.
So how does a okay, hold on. I've got so many questions. And I can't believe I'm going to ask you this question, but I'm asking it anyway because I'm interested in how you're going to respond. Should a person with mental health issues be a pastor?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Here's why. Because I think everybody's jacked up. I think everybody's broken. And I think the only people that should lead are messed up people. Okay, so here's the deal. Think about it this way. All the counselors, right, all the therapists, they're all whack,
yeah.
Right? That's why they are in that whole, profession in the first place. All the cops, they were all the ones that got in trouble when they were little, right? Because they know the value of it. Pastors who are super messed up at least have understanding, compassion, and they can't be arrogant. So there you go.
Man. See, there's a fine line. Hold on. I want to just stay on this issue here. There's a fine line between, you know, the reality that nobody's perfect, we get that. And I'm actually quite sick of that phrase because it's such a moot point. Nobody's perfect is just, I don't know, something that you say when you're still inside the box, which is a phrase that people who are in the box should never say. So nobody's perfect. I get that. But then is there not a list of kind of qualifications? Should you not have your house in order to be a spiritual leader? Like, I kind of get on a soapbox every once in a while when it comes to spiritual leaders. Yes, I do, Tim. I do.
No.
And I sort of say, I think a vast majority of spiritual leaders should be stepping down. Doesn't mean they should all step down forever, but I think there's a lot of spiritual leaders, a lot of pastors, who are staying in the position because of some kind of, well, how do I say this? They're hiding. They can't be open and honest. They need to step down, get surrounded by, what are you looking at me for?
No, but if they are honest, is that okay if they stay?
Yes, honest, step down, stay in the church, be loved by your church family, and walk through it, and then come back.
But can they walk through it as a pastor?
I think it's unrealistic.
Well, we were just talking about the Christian music needs to be more honest.
I think we should ask Lance Hahn.
Yeah. All right.
Lance?
Yes, I'm still here.
So what do you think?
Yes, well, let me tell you what I think. Here's the deal. You're absolutely right that there are certain things that if you're going to lead people, that you need to have an order, right? I get that. So I think for me, and part of what I was writing the book for, was the idea that there's a matter of stewardship of your body, right? And now, granted, it could be that I can't manage it well enough. If I was not on meds right now, I would not be a pastor. I don't think that I would be fit, because I would have all kinds of stuff crashing into my world, and I couldn't be others-focused. It's super dominating. So do I think that a lot of guys are hiding in the pulpit and they should be out? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do I think I'm one of them? Some days, absolutely. But all I'm saying is that I think that there's still enough drive. I think there's still enough connection with the Lord. I think there's still enough honesty. I think there's still enough power and vision and everything else coursing through to where I feel like I can pull off the job and do an honor for people and for the kingdom.
Okay, the book is called How to Live in Fear, Mastering the Art of Freaking Out by Lance Hahn. By the way, we're saying your last name, right? It's Hahn?
Yep, perfect.
It's not Hahn. Hahani?
That's how I spell it for people.
Okay, all right.
It's hot with an N.
So one of our interns picked up your book, and the first thing she said was, this is a really good-looking book cover, and really intelligently done and aesthetically well done. So it's got a giant elephant up on a chair because there's a mouse on the floor.
Yeah, the sheer irrationality of that was what I loved so much about the cover.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly it. Okay, so Tim, you may relate to him more than I do.
Yes.
But when I get up in front, I don't think I've ever had a panic attack. Have you?
No. My big thing is anxiety.
Okay, I can't remember the last time I was anxious. I don't get anxious about stuff. So, Lance, what do you say to us who just don't get your world?
All right, so I would say, first of all, thank God you don't, all right? Because I don't want anyone to have this stuff. This stuff is horrible. But I do think that you need to realize that other people don't share your world, right? I mean, everybody's got to figure out the idea that not everybody's having the same experience in this world. The way that I try to describe it to people is this is kind of how it feels, and this is why it's so irrational. Imagine we're sitting in your studio, and there's a tiger in the room. Someone lets a tiger in the room, and the tiger's going to kill you, and everyone says, just ignore it. I just ignore it. I'm sure it's fine. The thing's looking at you, licking its lips, all that stuff, right? And you're supposed to just go on with your day. That sheer irrationality of a panic, fight or flight, right in the middle of it, and then you're supposed to just go on as if life is normal. So it's hard to understand how to be in fight or flight for a period of time. But if I jumped out and scared you, in that moment you're not thinking rationally.
Hmm.
You're reacting. And that's kind of how I have to live, and it lasts for maybe a couple minutes to a couple hours to a couple days.
Okay, so we have a part of the church world that still says, believe it or not, that if you take pills for something, you're not trusting God.
Yes.
Your answer to
them? I don't like those people.
No, I don't like them either.
I don't like those people.
No, I think
they're... Yeah. So one of the other reasons I wrote the book was to stop the bullies. I'm tired of that. Oh, you don't have enough faith. You don't love God enough. I mean, all that's garbage. Because here, think about it this way. If you have an external problem, you get preferred parking. You understand what I'm saying? You get a placard. If you're messed up in your head, you get a stigma. That's messed up.
I would like a clinically depressed parking spot. Tim, that would be...
It would be way in the back.
I would just say, yeah, they'd be way in the back and you'd just be alone.
You would, and it would take you 15 minutes to walk up.
Now, I bring this up because our good buddy, Tim the Tool, working the board here. Tim, do you want to confess? Do you want to open up? Do you want to share about your stuff?
Yeah, I'm clinically depressed. And it was something I was diagnosed later in life, like when I was 40. But I can look back now and clearly see, you know, well into my teens, that it was there. And I always just thought I was crazy or I wasn't good enough. And, you know, why can't I handle this situation and everybody else does? But yeah, it's definitely, you know, I'm wrestling the black dog every once in a while, and it's not an easy thing to do. But I found that once you get diagnosed, you know, it's bittersweet. It sucks that you've got a mental illness, but at least now you have some sort of understanding, some perspective that you can see from.
And what aspect or what part, what role has fear played in your life?
It's the anxiety. I don't know if you want to connect anxiety to fear, but sometimes I get some overwhelming anxiety that is completely irrational. Like, it doesn't need to be there. I can
see
that.
Like the cover of this book.
Yeah. You know, I'll be going to work and I'll have, you know, let's say all my classes happen to be watching movies. I've got all my report cards done. There's nothing on my table, so to speak, at work. But I will turn onto the street just before my school and I will just almost be nauseous with anxiety.
Okay, Pastor.
For no reason.
Pastor Lance Hahn. Pastor?
Yep, I'm ready.
What do you say to him? Do you give him a little? Do you give him a little kumbaya verse?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All you got to do is throw a verse at him, and he's good.
Oh, I am. Thank you. Says,
remember, Tim. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but a power.
Oh, yeah, there it is. There it is.
Yeah. Beautiful.
All right. So
thanks.
Here's the thing. Now, don't get me wrong. That totally, I hung on to that as a kid my whole life because I believe that that's true. But here's my point. Tim, that is so much of what I have had to experience. And so, yeah, the anxiety and the panic and the fear, it all gets kind of stirred up in the same pot. So here's what I love about what you're saying is you're saying, listen, I'm going to live anyway. Could God heal me? Yeah, but until he does, what am I supposed to do? And the fact that you're honest about it, walking into it, getting a diagnosis, and then being able to say, okay, what now? I mean, we all have to keep living, right? And so I'm super... super stoked that you're able to be open about it and not hiding.
Yeah, and I know it's an important thing in society now, especially, and I'm a high school teacher, and I know that, you know, when I'm open and honest about it at school, you know, the kids don't necessarily say it to my face, but I've had a number over the years sort of come back to me after the fact and say that, you know, it definitely helped them move forward. It was something that they realized they weren't the only one and they weren't crazy. And so it was, yeah, it's an important thing to try and be open about it, I think.
We are on the phone with Lance Hahn. He's the author of How to Live in Fear, Mastering the Art of Freaking Out. Well, listeners, let me ask you a few questions. When was the last time you freaked out, other than every Saturday between 1 and 5 here on The Drew Marshall Show? You know, heart palpitations, nausea, can't breathe. I mean, the reality is we are afraid. Everybody has fear at some time. Our world, I think, is riddled with fear-inducing headlines, financial meltdowns, family crisis, phobias, the whole thing. So no wonder the New York Times now reports 1 in 10 Americans is now taking antidepressant or anxiety medication. So how do we cope or even succeed in a world spinning out of control? Well, that's what this book is really all about, How to Live in Fear, Mastering the Art of Freaking Out. Now, I want to take issue with the way this is worded, and I don't know, you might hate me after this point, or your publisher will. Mastering the Art of Freaking Out. Can you really master it?
No, of course you can. I just love sarcasm.
Oh, okay.
And so, no, come on. You can't master anything, man. The whole idea is that you're in reaction. And so, but I do think I am really good at it. I do think I am really good at freaking out. I do think I'm really good at overreacting. I think I'm really good at hypochondria. I think I'm good at a lot of things. I don't know if I've mastered them, though.
What does your wife do with you, man? Like, has she wanted to lock you up or what?
Yeah, for probably a variety of reasons. For a long time, she had a hard time, you know, understanding it, but she's actually been really, really cool about it and patient. Now, she wrestles with depression. So she's
Oh, man, did you guys meet at a support group or something?
Dude, our house is just like, it's all dark, you know what I mean, where it's just, there's like lightning that strikes over it and heavy clouds. And our children look like Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yes.
It's beautiful.
Well done. So she understands. Sorry, I shouldn't have laughed at that. But no, I should have. But what you're saying is that she gets your angst, your darkness, because she rages with it herself.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we've been able to be a support for one another. And really, we've managed it well. So, like, if you look at us, here's the other point I think that's super important. If you look at us, honestly, our house looks like Pottery Barn. I mean, you walk in and we look cute, and there's all this stuff, and everybody, oh, they have the perfect life, and look at their cute little fuzzy dog. My point is that just the outside doesn't show you what's going on, right? And so we look like the perfect little family, but we're really messed up, and we're just real honest people.
Okay, I've got, man, my brain's going two different directions. Let's go this way. The thinking that those who are dealing with something, do they want to go to somebody who can offer them help, and they see that person as, they haven't pedestaled them necessarily, but they see them as reaching a hand down to them, helping them up? Or do they want to go to somebody who's going to put their arm around them and go, yeah, I get it, I'm screwed up too? I think different people reach out for help differently and have different expectations. So, and what I'm trying to say, awkwardly in this question, there really is a question here, is, again, do I want to go to pastor buddy guy who's got anxiety and fear and freaking out disorder or whatever to with my issues? Or do I want to go to somebody who actually is clear, at the risk of sounding like Tom Cruise, and can reach, you know, I get that impression that they're going to help me up. But I guess in saying that, what I'm saying is those that are suffering with something can't help me. Is that what I'm saying, Tim?
Yes.
Thanks.
Just thought I'd help you out there.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Lance?
Way to dive in there, Tim. That was awesome.
Yeah, I was a little anxious about answering that question.
Here's the thing. First of all, let me just say this, Drew. I totally agree with you that different personalities need different things. Because, like, for example, in my personality, if I'm freaking out, I don't want somebody else to go, yeah, you're right, it is worse than you ever thought. That just makes everything harder. Then I want somebody that would step in and go, dude, you're being irrational, that's not really what's going on, you're going to be fine. I need that. But when it comes to, I don't want to go to somebody who arrogantly looks in a book and tells me something that isn't actually practical. I would much rather go to someone who's walked it, begun to work with it, actually knows what is legit and what's not, and doesn't give me pat answers. So honestly, in my personality, I need someone that gets it. Now, my therapist, I do have a therapist, and she does not suffer from this stuff, but she's sharp and intelligent and runs with me and knows how, wherever I'm going, she can keep up with me, and she can be able to say, hey, Lance, I think this is legit, this isn't.
Okay. I really want to hear the story about you freaking out on the plane.
Okay, this story, this is legit, all right? I'm going to tell you the fast version. I get on the plane, I'm completely thrashed after being in Turkey and Greece for 2 weeks. It was a study tour. I'm coming back, one of my contacts is broken, and I ran out of meds. I get on the final flight from Chicago back to Sacramento, in the area where I live, and right when we're taxiing out, this guy starts chanting the Quran.
No.
I'm not, this is only 8 months after 9/11. So if you're going to be on an American flight, yeah, chanting the Quran out loud 8 months after 9/11, and you're by yourself, that's hardcore. Now, this guy may have been afraid of flying, he may have been the nicest guy in the world, he may have been praying, whatever, but everyone tensed up. So he sat right next to me.
And of course
he did. The whole time, he had his laptop and he's typing in all these codes, and I'm like, man, I've seen Jason Bourne movies. I know what's happening. This is world domination. And so I was completely nervous being next to him. Then this is the best part. So they come by and they're like, hey, do you want a meal? And the guy said, well, I ordered a vegetarian plate. And the stewardess says, well, I'm sorry, what's your name again? He told her. And she said, I'm sorry, I'm not seeing you on the manifest. And I'm like, whoa, you have to be on the manifest to be on the plane. And then, so she said, well, I'll help you out anyway. 5-10 minutes later, he shuts his laptop, says to the flight attendant, hey, I need to plug my laptop into the back of the plane.
Yeah.
She said, it won't work, that's a different type of connection. He said, oh, it'll work. And she said, all right, follow me. And they go in the back. And so that's why I was freaking out. I wanted to jump out of my skin. I seriously considered causing a stir so they would have to land the plane. And I'm reasoning out, I may not be able to see my daughters graduate from high school because I'm in prison, but everyone is going to be safe. So anyway, that's my story.
Holy cow. Wow. But dude, that's got nothing to do with anxiety disorder. That's a legit deal, man. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but if you put somebody trapped like me, you know, in a little container with you.
So hold on, let's get practical here for a second. You're out of meds, you're traveling, you're tired, a kind of a strange situation goes down. What are some little tricks you've learned to make yourself not go nuts? Do you just recite verses? Do you pray? Do you recite the Quran? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, see, that guy that's sitting next to me had actually been in one of my classes. Yeah. Actually praying out loud. No, not really. Here's a couple things that I do. Number one is prayer is an absolute for me. It's a constant. And I think it has to do with saying there is no one on earth that can help me out right here. No one understands me. No one can solve my problem. No one can understand irrationality but God. So, first of all, prayer is a given. The practical pieces are, number one, I should never have got on a plane in that condition. We got to do all the prep beforehand, because once you're in it, you just kind of hang on. I mean, it's a crazy storm, but you hang on. All your prep is done before. But if you are in it, there is a way to shift from one hemisphere to the brain to the other when you start doing things like complex math, or you start doing crossword puzzles, or you start doing... So I bring crossword puzzles with me and try to get my head in a completely different line of thinking. So there's a whole bunch of tricks you can do, and I think you need to do.
I want to know how you have dealt with those who have subtly or not so subtly said to you that if you were really tight with God, he would have fixed this in you by now. How do you respond to that, other than violence?
So honestly, here's how I respond. The first thing that happens is I doubt myself, right? I mean, that, if we're going to talk about realistically.
Yeah.
If when somebody's going to go after you, I mean, there's a certain degree where you're going, man, this is not right. This is messed up. What more could I have done? So I probably doubt myself. But over the years, I've gotten to the place where I'm very, very confident in my views and my beliefs and my understanding of this stuff. And so right off the bat, I usually try to drop the conversation into something deeper, or I walk away. If they're not willing to dialogue with me, there's nothing I can do.
Right. So if it was just meant to be a drive-by, then, you know, what's the point?
Yeah, and if it's that, you just take the shots and you roll. But if they're willing to dialogue, you've got to get them into a place that's a lot deeper, because they're not thinking right. They're thinking in categories and stereotypes and generalities, and there's no answers when you're that far up.
Ooh, I like that.
Mm. Yeah.
There's no answers when you're that far up yourself.
Yep.
That's what he said, I think. I think I'll just re-quote that. Tell me about this radio thing you do. Apparently you do a little radio, little something-something. What's that all about? Ask Pastor Lance.
That's right. So we, during the week, all my sermons and stuff, they're all online. But on Fridays, we record out a show where they ask me live questions. So if anyone has any questions for me, I don't want to know them ahead of time.
Ooh.
So the person that's hosting it, they ask them to me live. And I also do this live at the church, and I do it recorded. We put those on the radio for Fridays. My ultimate goal would be to take live call-in, but I just don't have the time to organize it out.
Let me tell you, from someone who has taken live call-in over the last 13 years, it ain't all that.
But you're still doing it, Drew? Come on.
No, I don't take calls anymore. The only time I take calls now is when I do useless television trivia. We play theme songs from old TV shows, and people can win absolutely nothing if they guess which television show. That's it.
That sounds motivating.
It is, and we get far more reaction and response when we do that than when we open up. That's one of the reasons I stopped taking calls, because I did serious stuff, and you just get the strangest, most shallow human beings calling in. Praise the Lord. Okay, so Lance Hahn is the last name, H-A-H-N, and that's the website as well, lancehahn.com. He is the author of How to Live in Fear, Mastering the Art of Freaking Out. It actually has been a pleasure, Lance. I appreciate this very much, and I wish you the best with all your issues.
Drew and Tim, I was shockingly impressed by you, and I thought that you were actually wonderful human beings.
Stop it.
Wow.
Stop.
That's the drugs talking, brother.
Yeah, just your meds. Up the dose, baby.
That's totally it. I'm going to go take some more.
Yeah, okay, good stuff. See you, Lance. Thanks, man.
Hold that tiger. Hold that tiger. Hold that tiger. Hold that tiger. Hold that tiger.
Everyone knows that little girls need daddy's love, but who's strongly promoting the truth that little boys need mom's respect? Just as Dr. Emerson Eggerichs transformed millions of marriages with a biblical understanding of love and respect, he now turns these principles to one of the most important relationships of all, a mother and her son. Find practical tips and life-changing stories of the transformative effect of respect in the relationships with our children in Mother and Son, The Respect Effect by Dr. Emerson Eggerichs. Available where books are sold.